Hello, I'm Emily Jensen, Dialogue Web Editor and Business Manager. On behalf of the Dialogue Gospel Study, I am pleased to introduce the following Friends of Dialogue who will be providing some of their thoughts on the recent General Conference: Nathan Kitchen, Ray Mains, Gabriel Gonzalez, Theric Jepson, and Catherine Schertz. Please enjoy.
Before sharing a reflection on April's General Conference, I want to provide some context. I grew up in an era in the church where we didn't just ignore the Christian liturgical calendar. We had an outright aversion to it. To us, structuring worship around the life of Christ through seasons of preparation and reflection was for the Catholics and Protestants, hardly a mark of the only true and living church. I knew Easter and Christmas, of course, but I was essentially illiterate regarding Advent, Epiphany, Ordinary Time, Lent, and Holy Week. The first time I even heard about Lent was in high school after my family moved from Utah to Illinois. My friends began talking about giving up M&Ms or television. To me, this seemed peculiar, even performative. On Easter, a Protestant friend greeted me with, "He is risen." I stared back blankly. What an odd thing to say out of the blue, I thought. After a moment of awkward silence, he said, "Don't you know what to say back?" And I admitted that I had no clue what he was doing, to which he taught me that I should answer, "He is risen indeed." Weird, I thought. For decades, the Christian practice of living in God's time remained foreign to me. Most of the time, I didn't even think about it because as a Latter-day Saint, I had no need to think about it, until I met my husband Matthew in 2017. Matthew is an Episcopalian and a PhD in religious history. In dating me, he experienced a baptism by fire into Latter-day Saint culture and theology. In turn, he opened the doors of a liturgical tradition to me. I felt humbled as I discovered the depth, beauty, and symbolism of worshiping Christ through the rhythm of a sacred year. My brain got it, but my true blue Mormon heart resisted. I was clinging to a learned aversion that had calcified my personal worship over 50 years. It wasn't until last year during General Conference when Elder Stevenson invited us to broaden our Easter celebrations into Holy Week that I finally jettisoned that ingrained prejudice. This year, I fully embraced the liturgical calendar leading up to Easter. During my lunch hour, I went up the road from my office and joined with the Lutherans for an Ash Sunday service. I was not prepared for how meaningful it would be for me, especially when the pastor swiped ashes in the shape of a cross upon my forehead, looking me in the eye as he reminded me, "From dust you came, and to dust you shall return." In the context of the entire service, it was as if I was finally understanding this truth for the first time in my life. I thought long and hard about what I would give up for Lent and chose something deeply meaningful and personal to me. Turns out, 40 days of giving up something of my choosing proved to be transformative, a very transformative spiritual practice. Even Matthew noticed the change in me. I was astounded and grateful, for it brought me into Holy Week focused on Christ. Matthew and I spent Holy Week in Barcelona, where we participated in the Blessing of the Palms on the steps of the Barcelona Cathedral on Palm Sunday. We held our palm branches high as the Archbishop came down into the crowd to sprinkle them with water, transforming these ordinary branches into sacramentals, tangible reminders of faith. Throughout the week, we intersected with a community of faith, remembering Christ's final week through masses and processions, each day intensifying through Monday, Thursday, and Good Friday. And then we spent Holy Saturday on a plane back to Phoenix. I was anxious. Easter Sunday is the apex of the Triduum, the most sacred moment of the year. How would my religion handle this climax during General Conference? To be honest, and I feel a bit ashamed to admit this, I worried that my faith tradition couldn't match the spiritual energy required to carry the ball over the finish line. Then, Dieter F. Uchtdorf stood to open the Sunday morning session of conference, declaring, "Happy Easter." He dove straight into the grief of the woman at the tomb. They went to the tomb out of love and a desire to serve, even if they didn't fully understand. They found the tomb empty, where two angels asked them, "Why do you seek the living among the dead?" President Uchtdorf then declared the bold message of the empty tomb: "Jesus is risen." We may read about Jesus in the Bible, but he is not confined to the pages of a book any more than he is confined to a grave of stone. We speak of Christ today in present tense because he lives. The invitation of the angels to Mary Magdalene and her companion extends to us today. Come and see the empty tomb, and go quickly and tell others that he is risen. This was an electrifying moment for me, as the meaning of Lent and Holy Week that I had just experienced came into intense focus. These events, from Ash Wednesday to Easter, I experienced with others in community. Through a common Christian liturgical worship, the life of Christ is experienced in community. I had stood with my neighbors in Mesa as dust and ashes on Ash Wednesday. During Lent, I was part of a community preparing ourselves for Easter through shared ritual. I stood with a vast community gathered on the plaza of the Barcelona Cathedral to witness the blessing of the palms, experiencing joy in community. The entire Holy Week, we as a community were witnessing to one another of the Christ of the empty tomb. And now from the pulpit of a conference center, President Uchtdorf tied our experience leading to Easter with one common denominator: community. Easter is not just a one-day celebration. It is an expansive moment in time and space where we are all running towards the tomb as a community together to witness to one another that he is risen indeed.
Hi, I'm Ray Maines. Several weeks ago, our family was evacuated from our home in Doha, Qatar, due to the U.S.-Israeli war in Iran. Like any war, I feel like it disrupts your lives. It leads you to ask a lot of questions about purposes and trying to find answers with how to proceed in a state of constant uncertainty and high stress. The stress is very burdensome on me as a mom to small children, and on as a partner to a spouse who is now trying to navigate working remotely and also needing to return back to the office. So it is a very unique time for our family, and this past conference brought some hope and some peace with how to navigate uncertainty. And that's kind of what I wanted to share with you on how that is, some of the messages have impacted me. During the first, I think it was the first session, we heard from Elder Bednar, and he said, "Enduring to the end is the quest of a lifetime." And, you know, usually when I hear the phrase "endure to the end," it sounds, you know, like a struggle, nothing quite enjoyable as a quest of lifetime. And he wants to encourage, he's encouraging us to find the joy in this life, even though it is, does involve enduring. And then joy again is brought up by Sister Freeman. She says, "Joy is not the absence of sorrow. It is the presence of Christ in your life." And these messages of joy, and I feel like there were even more references to it. I even had joy on my kids' conference bingo, and they marked that one off pretty early. But the theme I'm getting is that no matter what we're experiencing, what we're enduring, there is an opportunity for us to find joy. And I would also like to add, Elder Matswakothwa, he was right in that no one, his daughter had said that no one was going to remember their name. I am practicing and I will get it right. But he said that Christ knows us by name. And he knows us and speaks to us in our language and understands our circumstances. And one of the hardest things about my current circumstances, is deciding where to go and where I can find community. And the reality is I am struggling to find a place where I can go and have community of people going through the exact same thing. People that find themselves displaced from their homes because of war, raising small children, people with experience and some traumas due to ongoing missile interceptions and hiding on basements. I have friends in Doha that were living through that, and we spread all over the world. And some of them are going back, and it's this question of, where can I find a community of people that understand me? And the answer is likely I'm not going to find it where I'm at right now. Where I'm going to find my community is in prayer and connecting with my Savior Jesus Christ, who understands all of our circumstances. And having all of this happen and do a conference over Easter weekend and going over Holy Week each day with my children and being reminded of Christ's suffering in Gethsemane was so he could understand this current experience in my life. And that as I'm experiencing it and I feel alone, I'm really not alone. There is someone who understands, someone that I can express the stress and weight to. And I can counsel with in determining what to do next and where to go and how to navigate things. I feel like life is, at this moment in time, is very accelerated, and decisions are being made that are going to be impacting not only my immediate future, but the future of my children and my family. And Elder Uchtdorf said that we can speak of Christ as if he is present. And we say he lives because he lives and he's present. And I am grateful for that bit of light and reminder from General Conference that I can find joy in this circumstance, that Christ is there for me in the present. He understands me and understands what I'm going through. And honestly, that's what I needed to hear.
Hello, friend dialogue. I've lost track. Is this my 16th attempt to record this, my 20th? At this point, as you will see, I am reduced to recording in my children's bedroom on Zoom. But let's start, will we, by classing the joint up a little bit and erasing those bunk beds with my friend Willie Shakes. Now, Shakespeare quoted at least twice in this conference, including by Neil L. Anderson, the line, "Love is not love that alters when it alteration finds." It's a good line. It's Elder Anderson and Kathy. Kathy and Neil. Anyway, let's read the whole sonnet, shall we? Then we'll get back to this question. "Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. Oh, no. It is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be error and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved." It's good advice for marriage. Love is not love, which alters when it alteration finds. It's a good point, but I think it's more broadly applicable. Let's start, shall we, by going to Elder Bednar, who quoted Mormon. Mormon said, "Charity is the pure love of Christ, and it endureth forever, and whoso is found possessed of it at the last day, it will be well with him." Now, I want to talk about one word, and this is a family trait. This is an opportunity for me to plug my brother Kyle. Kyle wrote a great, let me move over here, this thing called A Vicious Remarkable Vision of Her Father. You can read it in dialogue. You can, you know, hear it in the podcast, whatever. What's Mormons up to? Elder Bednar points out that, what does it mean? Whoso is found possessed of charity at the last day, it shall be well with him. Does it mean that we possess the charity? Or does it mean that the charity possesses us? Could be either. The thing that I found particularly interesting is Elder Bednar is saying that enduring to the end is inseparable from developing charity. Enduring to the end, it's the joyous quest of a lifetime. It's a gradual process in trusting and becoming like our savior. But it's the same thing as charity. I don't know about you, but I am an American Latter-day Saint. And like a lot of American saints, I am feeling a bit myopic in the moment. I'm consumed, shall we say. We've already applied that word to charity. I am consumed with the, shall we say, lack of charity in American governance at the moment. I would love it to have prophets, seers, and revelators make some obvious comments for those who might need to hear them. That never really happens, hardly, but President Oaks did say something which to me seemed to meet this need I felt. But first, I want to talk about a story he told. He heard it in state conference. There was a nurse. She was telling this story about the most repulsive man she'd ever met. He was cruel. He was rude. He was mean-spirited. He was unkind. He was vulgar. She didn't like him. But once she heard a terrible noise from his room, and she ran there, and as she turned and saw him lying there on the ground, she felt an almost electric current of love from God to this man. She saw him in that moment as God saw him, and she held him, and she comforted him as he cried and just said that he wanted to go home. That was, she said, one of the great spiritual experiences of her life, and then Elder Oaks, a powerful lesson to him as well. And this is what President Oaks said in this talk. He said, loving others isn't surrendering our values. It is our values. I just realized this has not been part of the original 20 recording attempts. Maybe this is why it's taken so long. Somebody else spoke. I forget who it was now. I'm not going to look it up. Spoke about how sometimes it feels like you have to balance forgiving all versus, you know, offering a necessary correction. This, I guess, is the problem I have as a myopic American saint. I agree. Loving others isn't surrendering our values. It is our values. But how do you love someone enough to correct them versus forgive everyone? This is a real question in our civic life right now. Charity is sort of a personal pet cause of mine. In my brief hours and weeks, even to the edge of doom, I am hoping to develop some charity. I want to, you know, have the good sense to be an ever-fixed mark, to look on tempest and never be shaken. I agree, love is not love, which alters when alteration finds. And the only love like that is Christ's love, the pure love of Christ. And I want to possess it, but I also want to be possessed of it at the last day. That is a big and a difficult and a hard thing. And it works on the small levels and it works on the big levels. But you know what? If enduring to the end is inseparable from developing charity, then look at me. I finally got this video done.
A solemn assembly is a grand affair, very formal, where the whole church, represented by the members assembled in the vast conference center, raise their hands to honor and sustain the new prophet of God. So I was surprised and rather delighted when the first speaker up, Elder Patrick Kieran, began by talking about the challenges and blessings of the callings of regular church members. Here are a few of his points that stood out to me. We sustain not only the highest church leaders, but also each other in our ward and state callings with our prayers, encouragement, and faith. In this way, common consent can become a beautiful mix of agency, community, and faith. Our callings offer us all a chance to emulate the Savior, practicing meekness, forgiveness, and love as the Lord works through imperfect servants striving to do His will. President Oaks accepted a call he neither sought nor expected, claiming no infallibility while trusting in the Lord's guiding hand. Elder Kieran concluded by reminding us what 12-year-old Jesus said when Mary and Joseph found him in the temple, "I am about my Father's business," pointing out that we can be too. Every calling is about His business as we join the Savior in His infinite redeeming work. Once Elder Karen got me thinking about how roles we ascribe to prophets and apostles can also apply to ordinary members, I saw the same theme in two other talks. One was Dieter Uchtdorf's Sunday morning address, starting with the women who witnessed Christ's empty tomb and the disciples whom he instructed to tell the whole world of his resurrection. While we sustain apostles and prophets as witnesses of Christ to the whole world, Elder Uchtdorf pointed out that the Lord has entrusted each of us with sacred experiences. He then asked, "What have we seen, felt, and experienced? Shall we not become witnesses of Jesus Christ?" The third talk, Empowering Individual Members, was by Sister Susan Porter, speaking to the primary children. She told them how Jesus offered to implement our Father's plan of happiness during our mortal journey, saying, "Here I am, send me." She continued, affirming to the children that Jesus knows you and understands you, and he will help you grow into the magnificent person you are meant to be. Then, rather boldly, Sister Porter told the children to follow Jesus' example and say, "Here am I, send me." That means listening carefully to discover what he will ask you to do, then serving and standing for truth and right. A young boy brought 5 small loaves and 2 fishes, and with it the Lord was able to feed thousands. You do not need to worry about fixing all the problems around you. Just offer what you have and share God's love. I think that is good advice for anyone. So, I anticipated a solemn assembly honoring a new prophet with lots of admonitions to follow him, but instead, I felt the conference, especially these talks, encouraged and empowered everyone, including the very youngest. My takeaway from this conference is that we are all about our Father's business, we can all be witnesses of Christ, and with the Savior, we can all say, "Here am I, send me."
So this last weekend was General Conference, and it reminded me of Star Trek. I'm a big Star Trek fan, and in Star Trek 1, there's a point in the movie in which Spock says something to the effect of, "There comes a time in our lives when we all turn to someone, a father, a brother, a god, and ask, is this all I am? Is there nothing more?" And I think this is the reason, this question is the reason why we are drawn to look for God. I think it's our desire to transcend. That is why we seek to find God. That is what we look for in God. And I was reminded of that this General Conference at several points when Elder Gerald Caussid talked about how the greatest miracle in the universe really is God's relationship with us. And he quoted Elder Neil E. Maxwell, who was really a favorite orator of mine as I was growing up. He quoted Elder Neil A. Maxwell to the effect that there's no greater miracle than that a God who governs galaxies would be in the details of our lives. But we don't always see him in the details of our lives, right? We don't always find him there. And I appreciated Elder Clark Gilbert's sort of admitting this and talking about the reasons why some don't immediately find their way home. And this includes things like feeling as though one doesn't belong, feeling inadequate somehow, struggling with doubt, being limited by our own traditions. And these are real things. I think at one point or another, most of us fit into some of these categories. And even so, he beckons us. And I think that's really a powerful theology, a powerful thought, that even so, he beckons us. Another Clement Machwa Gotata, and I'm sure I just slaughtered his name, so I apologize for that. But he reminded us, and I think this is important, that Jesus Christ calls us by name. Even when we doubt, even when we're afraid, even when all these things that Elder Gilbert was talking about become a reality, he still beckons us. He still calls on us by name. And so this brought me to reflect on the idea of preceding grace as developed by Saint Augustine, where God calls on the individual and prepares the person to listen to that call on his or her return home to use the parlance of Elder Gilbert, even before we know it, he's there, he's calling on us, even when we are doubtful, even when we can't hear it, even when we can't see him in the details of our lives. As St. Augustine would argue, he's still calling us and really has a pathway prepared for us. And this is a loving, a very patient God. I think this idea is really compelling of a God who awaits for us. And this reminded me of the Baroque poet Lope de Vega. He has a sonnet that begins with Pastor que con tus silbos amorosos, or Sonnet 14 is probably an easier way to remember it. But if you can, I would suggest you look up the sonnet and read it in Spanish. What I want to do, though, is read a translation into English by Stephen Wentworth Arndt. And with this poem, I would like to read this brief, to finish this brief theological reflection with the words of Lope de Vega as rendered by Arndt. And so here goes. O shepherd, whose loving fives have blown to wake me from my heavy slumber's clutch, whose staff is made from crosswood, inasmuch as your strong arms are held on it outthrown. Turn eyes of mercy to what faith have shown, for I confess you, Lord, in love's deep touch, and pledge my word to follow you with such delightful feet and sweetly fifing tone. You die from love, O shepherd, hear me then. Let not my hardened sins dishearten you, for you're such a friend to weary man. Thus wait and listen to my troubles too. But how, though, can I say, await me when you stand and wait with feet that nails pierce through?
Greetings. My name is Rebecca DeSchweinitz, and I'm thrilled to serve as a board member at the Dialogue Foundation and as one of the hosts of Dialogue Gospel Study. In each episode, which we record live the second and fourth Sunday of every month, we welcome esteemed speakers from a variety of backgrounds to share their insights and perspectives on the Come Follow Me lessons. Our aim is to spark meaningful conversations about the scriptures, to connect them to our personal experiences and to our understandings and explorations of the gospel. To stay in the loop with our upcoming lessons and this opportunity to engage with Mormon thought, culture, and belief, be sure to visit dialoguejournal.com and sign up for our newsletter. By doing so, you'll receive updates and timely links to join our live stream lessons. Additionally, you can catch up on our past guests and episodes by subscribing to Dialogue Journal on YouTube, Facebook, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dialogue Podcast Network.